In the last fortnight, our region's been hit by three big natural disasters: a tsunami in Samoa, earthquakes in Sumatra, floods in Vietnam and the Philippines. While the devastation's awful, most of us will only maybe make a donation to an aid agency. But the man you're about to meet decided to do something a bit more direct. In 2004, when the tsunami swept all before it across South Asia, Donny Patterson was watching television in his bedroom in Newcastle. Seeing those images, he decided he had to go immediately to Sri Lanka to do whatever was needed. The story of his relief efforts in a Sri Lankan village has become an award-winning documentary at the Cannes Film Festival. Now his personal story is out. It's called No Ordinary Bloke, and Donny Patterson's with me in the Life Matters studio. Welcome.
G'day, thanks.
When you saw the impact of the tsunami, it was Christmas time, wasn't it? What was it that made you think, gee, I've got to go and do something?
Yeah, well, it was like everybody else. I was just watching this hour after hour unfold on the telly, and the catalyst for me to go there was when Reverend Tim Costello got on the news and said he couldn't even get a truck driver. He was at a place called Gaul. He couldn't get a truck driver. They'd all run away. And that was it. With that, that was the least I could do, was drive a truck. So that was really the catalyst for me to go. I'd been mulling it over for a couple of days whether I should go or not. And like I say, when he came on the TV and said that, well, I just knew I had to go. Something inside of me, a high power, whatever you want to call it, that was just driving me to go and do that.
But you didn't like get in touch with an aid agency that might take you over there and you work with them. You just basically got yourself on a plane.
Yeah, that's right. Having said that, I did apply to a couple of aid agencies via email, but at that time I'm pretty sure they were probably very inundated with people. And so, yeah, I got a bit frustrated with that. So I thought, yeah, well, I'll take the bull by the horns and just go and jump on the plane. And that's exactly what I did.
Now, when this was happening, you'd had, and you say this in your book, more than your fair share of problems. You'd had depression, you'd been unemployed, you'd had physical injuries, you'd battled with drugs. Did you wonder if you'd have the strength to do this?
I always considered myself a pretty strong guy, like physically and mentally most of the time. There's been some things in my life, obviously, that have taken that away from me at times, but I was in a big pit of depression at that point in my life, and it was just something that sort of rekindled me inside and just gave me that bit of drive that I never had for a long while.
Something to focus on, something to do.
Yeah, I guess. And, you know, when I got there and had a look around, I was really, you know, what was I to be depressed about?
That's it. Actually, that's something you say, you know, and it's a great cliche, isn't it? There's always someone worse off than you. But that is what you found when you got to Sri Lanka.
Absolutely. I mean, those people didn't have anything, less than nothing, most of them. The clothes they had on their backs, and that was about it. And, you know, when I look at my lifestyle to what those people have, it's just streets ahead. So, you know, that doesn't mean that you can beat depression by just going to help somebody less fortunate. There is a chemical imbalance that needs to be treated with meds, but a lot of it you can, you know, I found helping people less fortunate myself.
That was key though, wasn't it, for you? Just that realisation.
Absolutely. It was like a steam train hit me, actually, you know. It just, like standing in that rubble and, you know, the despair and people crying and wailing and nowhere to live, nothing to eat, no water. I felt like a king, really, you know, the way I live here compared to those people. And, you know, when I start to feel a little bit blue or whatever, I just cast my mind back to those days in Paralia there and, you know, the early days and just think, well, you know, Donnie, come on, man, you know.
Well, yeah, I just want to talk briefly about before the tsunami, because it was pretty heavy going. You'd had the drug addiction, you had the depression, you left the army and you'd had conflicts as a father and as a husband. Do you now have, when you look back on that time, a better understanding of what was going wrong and why it was happening?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not making excuses for my behaviour, but there's definitely some incidences, critical incidences in my life when I look back now that were definitely turning points. The couple of motor vehicle accidents within the space of a short time of each other. And, you know, like I say, looking back now, I wasn't the greatest dad, I wasn't the greatest person, but I was ill. I was sick. I was probably in denial.
You didn't realise, or you did and you just didn't want to know it?
Look, I guess I was in denial. You know, I was a soldier. You know, soldiers should be able to deal with death and destruction, which is all a crock, really, at the end of the day. We're human like anybody else. And, you know, like I say, looking back then, I was sick and I was probably in denial. And I'm so glad that, you know, I've been able to see that now and change it and look for the warning signs. Well, know when the warning signs come now and just go and get a top up whenever I need it.
Yeah. On Life Matters today, my guest is Donny Patterson, who's whose story is told in a new book. It's called No Ordinary Bloke. It's he's co-authored it with Neil Cadogan, and you might have heard of Donnie because his story of how he helped was one of a team of people who helped a village in Sri Lanka after the tsunami in 2004. It's been made into a documentary. That documentary's won awards at Cannes. Now, Donnie, you, when you were a younger father, you repeated probably many of the mistakes that your own parents, especially your dad, had made. And, you know, no one wants to do that, but it's easy to do it.
Well, yeah, monkey see, monkey do, as they say, pardon the cliche, but yeah, the way your children are brought up is a direct reflection on the parents. You know, I'm not here to bag my parents, but we didn't have the greatest upbringing at all. But you know, Dad was a tough Scotsman from Glasgow, you know, brought up during the war, etc. And, well, we lost Mum pretty early as well. But, you know, again, I look back at those, I reflect back at those days, and I think, well, yeah, they weren't the greatest of times, and I wasn't the best father. I call myself a deadbeat dad, in fact, I think, you know, and that's exactly what I was. But again, you know, I was ill at that time, and, you know, I'm proud to say now that I'm not perfect, but I've learned a lot from those lessons that there, and I'm very grateful that, that my family nucleus is still together intact after all this, you know. I could have lost everything many times.
But, I mean, I'm not saying you were set up to not go so well at parenthood, but, I mean, I think you'd lived in 30 different towns by the time you were 17.
Yeah, exactly, 30 different places. And that took a lot of working out too, don't worry. And then when I left home and went to the army, well, we moved around again a bit. I think, you know, that's good in some ways, but in other ways it's not so good. You never get any sort of real stability. That's why we're so happy with Newcastle. We love it there. We've all settled there now well, and, you know, been there 5 years. I think that's probably the longest we've stayed anywhere as a family group, to be honest. But having said that, we've moved around Newcastle a couple of times as well. I don't know, maybe it's a gypsiness or something, I don't know.
If we go back to Sri Lanka, when you get there, you basically teamed up with three other travellers. They're all from America. And you head south to the village of Paralia.
That's it.
What did you find when you got there?
Oh, crikey. I'm just in the bus now. We're just heading down the coast. And we stopped off at a few coastal villages along the way. You know, a lot of these places have just been completely missed. They'd had no help whatsoever, hardly a Band-Aid or a bandage. So the first couple of days, we're just really bandaging people up with, you know, with the medical supplies that we brought ourselves and we bought in the country. A lot of the places were just smashed, just levelled, absolutely levelled. The construction of houses in Sri Lanka are not built to the same specs as they are in Australia. Having said that, I think even our houses would have had trouble coping with a 40-foot wave. But everything was just flattened, and like a tornado or a hurricane, there were still odd buildings standing here and, you know, an odd half a building there, but generally the place was just flattened, you know, just like a bomb had been dropped on the place and just flattened it.
When you got there, it must have been really, really daunting, the sheer scale of it.
When I got off the plane and, you know, got out into the streets around the airport, you wouldn't have known that there was anything wrong, but the next couple of days, as we ventured further out, like 10 kilometres out of the capital of Colombo, places are just flattened. And, you know, people are there starving. They're watching the aid trucks just driving past, heading further south. And that was the news we were getting as we were driving down south. Is, you know, keep going south. There's a lot of people that need a lot of help. You know, it was like 2 weeks after the tsunami, we lobbed up in Paralia and nobody'd done anything to help these people. Thousands of people come to visit the train, which got derailed there, but nobody actually stopped as much to give them a bottle of water or anything. I still can't get over that today.
Well, how did you? I mean, that's the sheer logistics of it. And as a former soldier, you know a fair bit about logistics, getting the right stuff to the right place at the right time. How did you manage that to rebuild the village? Were the four of you working with aid agencies, or what did you do?
Well, initially we just set up a little first aid thing out of our van. That was the first day we got there. Then we cleaned out the library and we made up a med centre. So initially I was working in the medical centre, but as more help arrived and aid agencies came to help us, I took a more active role in the field, getting temporary shelters through the Danish People's Aid, who were a wonderful organisation that helped us out a lot there. We had German people from THW that helped us with the wells, you know, clean the wells out. So I was sort of water, electricity, shelter, you know, things that we need to get infrastructure back.
How long were you there altogether?
It's about 5 months in total, yeah, three different times. So,
did you ever have moments when you thought, oh, geez, I don't know if I can keep doing this?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh, there was days there I'm thinking, crikey, you know, I've bitten off more than what I could chew here. But, you know, we had Bruce, Alison, Oscar, my teammates. Bruce could always see the bigger picture, and Bruce was the guy that, you know, zen me out, if you like. He'd calm me down and, you know, just look at the bigger picture, you're doing all right, you know, you need to keep focus on the bigger picture. And, you know, again, when I did feel like that, I knew I had to go and speak to somebody, and that's what I'd do. Yeah.
Now, as we're talking, of course, one thing that's very fresh in everyone's mind is the tsunami in Samoa. Does that kind of bring it back for you?
I've got to say, I did have a few flashback memories, and I was pretty upset, to be honest, too. But they've got a lot of work to do there, not only in the short term, but in the long term now. You know, there's going to be a need for a tsunami early warning centre to be set up there, and there's got to be a lot of work to do there. But the good thing about it, if I can say there's a good thing about it, the response this time from Australia, New Zealand, America has just been first class, and they have mucked around. I think we sent our first plane within 12 hours.
Mm.
I think that's correct. You know, within 12 hours, there was a plane load of people going there. So, you know, our response time, and that's much better to this disaster.
And your own life has changed profoundly since 2004. One of the things is you've now created your own aid agency. You're the first person I've met who's created his own aid agency, actually. It's called Brick Aid.
That's right.
How does it work?
It's really in its early developmental stages at this point, you know. Basically, just want to set up a small team, like a hit squad, if you like, to go into these places that have disasters and get in on the ground and make some independent decisions. And I found in Sri Lanka, I guess because of the scope of it, that the bigger aid agencies, you know, got a bit bogged down with their bureaucracy and red tape.
Because they've got processes.
Exactly, and become a bit paralysed. And I mean, I know you have to have processes. I'm an ex-army guy, so I know all about processes. But the procedures there, they just seem to get bogged down in it and became paralysed. And nothing was doing. Nobody was doing anything. You know, so here's us four ragtaggers, and, you know, we're getting so much stuff done. And with the conjunction with the chief and his elders, we made on-the-ground decisions, and that's how it got done.
So you're hoping to kind of formalise that?
Absolutely, yeah. Been doing a bit of work on getting it recognised as a charity. We're operating as an incorporated association at this point. And I've got some really good people working for me there in the background there. And like I say, it's in the early stages at this point, but definitely hope we get something up and going.
You're still a relatively young bloke.
Relatively, yeah.
You're about my age. That's relatively young.
That's cool, yeah.
Do you see yourself doing this for the rest of your life?
Absolutely. Not with maybe Brick Aid. Brick Aid's something that I'm very passionate about. I also work for another organisation called MIVAC, who take care of clearing landmines and unexploded ordnances.
Mm.
We've done a lot of work in Laos in the last couple of years, and, you know, that's a real passion of mine, being an old soldier. You know, landmines and cluster munitions have caused untold damage and are still causing untold damage and grief to men, women and children in these places 40 years on from the war, you know, and they're all innocent people now, you know. They're kids that are mainly getting blown up by these things, and it's really sad when you go into a village and, you know, a third of the population's either missing a limb or legs, arms, half a face, ears, whatever, you know. It's really terrible, really.
Yeah.
So in conjunction with Brick Aid and MIVAC, that's two of the things that I'm really passionate about now and two of the things that I put a lot of my energies and efforts into.
But I think what is clear, or what seems to me to be clear, is that one of the biggest repair jobs has been on your own family, your relationship with your wife and kids.
Yeah,
it's a million miles from what it was, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It changed me in so many ways. Like, it made me realise, like I said, that I really had nothing to be depressed about. And, you know, where you see that photo of the book of my family and the family that's superimposed on there, Kamara, his two children, his wife and his sister, like, and they're all dead, you know, which is really sad. And my family's all alive, you know. I've got so much to be grateful for, and I think differently now. My way of thinking's different, you know. I'm much more grateful for what I have.
Well, I'm grateful that you came in today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Richard. Pleasure.
Donny Patterson, and his story, which he's co-authored with Neil Cadogan, is called No Ordinary Bloke. It's published by ABC Books. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National, and I'm Richard Adie.